C'est pas celle qui fait baver. Demande ta fable avec l'art comme nos semelles sur les pavés. La rage de voir nos putains entravés, de vivre en travers. La rage cravée, puis bien loin en arrière. La rage d'avoir grandi trop vite quand tes adultes te volent ton enfant. Pas imagine un mur et impoli. La rage, car impossible et cette paix d'en voulu. La rage de voir autant de CRS armés dans nos rues. La rage de voir ce putain de monde s'autodétruire et que ce soit toujours des innocents.
It's about 10:40 a.m. January 1st, 2007. We just heard from Amandla doing a little bit of a year-end wrap-up. And this is part of special programming on CKUT, 12 hours of special programming. We're already well into it, where you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. It's freezing rain outside, but so far all my scheduled guests have come in, and that's great. And after a bit of music, we're going to be hearing from Testa Salona, a live interview in studio, and a lot more. So I encourage everybody to stay tuned to special programming, La Rage de Peuple. Later on today, hopefully we'll be hearing from Iki Balam live in studio. That'll be around 2 for all of you who are listening all day. And at 6, we'll have a special edition of Radio Sanctuary live from the St. Gabriel's Church. There's a lot to look forward to. Stay tuned for an interview with Tess Tessalona.
D'y croire et de faire en sorte que ça bouge. La rage d'un Chirac, d'un Sharon, d'un Tony Blair ou d'un Bush. La rage car ce monde voit rouge, mais de gris ça y s'entourer parce qu'ils n'entendent jamais les cris.
So, welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM, La Rage de Peuple. And in studio, I have Tess Tessalona. Tess, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, good health and goodwill.
Tess, there's a lot that we can talk about. I guess I should give our listeners a bit of background to who you are. You're a well-known local activist, whether you like to be described as that or not, but you are active with the Immigrant Workers Center, the Center for Philippine Concerns. And I'm here, I guess I invited you to talk about the situation in the Philippines. I know that you were there earlier this year in 2000, yes. Or not this year, but last year, 2006, between March and June, you were part of a delegation that attended the International Labor Solidarity Mission. So could you describe what that mission was about? Why was it so urgent? Because I know there have been other delegations as well. Mm-hmm. I know there's been a significant amount of activism and organizing by both the Filipino exile community and Filipino solidarity activists all over Canada, all over the mm-hmm. world, to focus more attention on the Philippines. So describe your visit and describe why there's this urgency.
Well, last year, the year started really with an increasing number of human rights violations, including killings of community activists from students, youth, peasants, union organizers and members, to incarceration of parliamentarians, particularly in February, on the 20th anniversary of the People's Power One that happened in 1986, that eventually ousted Marcos, the current president, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, issued a presidential order which basically put the country in virtual martial law. This was eventually resolved by the Supreme Court to say that it's unconstitutional. But still, when they managed to put in jail Crispin Beltran, who is an elected member of Congress, representing the worker sector, he was still in jail up to now. And so our trip in March was to join the yearly International Solidarity Mission organized by the Kilusang Mayo Uno, the May 1st movement, to gather unionists from all over the world and also those who are involved in the labor sector. But seeing that it was a very important year, they also organized in conjunction with that a fact-finding mission about the human rights situation, the violation of human rights on the labor sector. And that's what we were there for.
I guess the Philippines doesn't strike many people right now as a country that should be a focus of our attention. And obviously, you've explained why it should be. I mean, I've come across some statistics from one of the recent delegations that talks about how in the Philippines is the second most dangerous country for unionists after Colombia, that it's the second most dangerous country for journalists after Iraq, and that latter figure is quite shocking. What are the root causes of this violence, of this state repression? I know there is an insurgency, a long time insurgency. Is that the excuse? What is the geopolitical reason for this level of violence? And I guess related to that question, why is it that the Philippines doesn't get that amount of attention and is seen as a model democracy in Asia?
Well, it comes back to the history of the Philippines. It's a long story, really. But in today's context, world context, it's because of this whole war against terrorism. The Philippine president was the very first one to have called Bush in support of the war on terrorism. And as you mentioned about the insurgency, which had been going on for a long time, it's in their mind a pretext to kill the so-called growing movement of insurgency in the Philippines. The Philippines is very strategic in its campaign against war on terror. The Philippines is, as you know, in Southeast Asia. It used to have the biggest military, naval, and air base outside of the United States. These bases had been removed because of the resistance that was waged by the Filipino people and in 1992. But since then, with all of these bilateral agreements that is being pushed by the U.S. government and connection with with their relation with the current governments, which us people know are also well picked by them. Since the removal of the bases, U.S. troops have been increasingly being stationed back there again. And with authority based on the visiting forces agreement. In just after the bombing of Afghanistan, the U.S. troops started going in there with the pretext of hunting the Al-Qaeda, so-called Al-Qaeda groups in the Philippines. Of course, everybody there knows that it's just a show. And in particular, this group was based in a small island in the south of the Philippines, is one-fourth the size of PEI, and yet there were hundreds and thousands of troops that were sent there to supposedly catch them. But everybody knows that they eventually made a deal.
Later on Raj de Peuple today, we'll be talking to various activists, both in Montreal and abroad about the situation in Lebanon, and we'll be talking about how Hezbollah is defined as a terrorist group. It's my understanding that the Filipino Communist Party, at least in the U.S., has recently been defined as a terrorist group. I'm not sure if that's the case in Canada as well, but I'm just wondering if you could speak to that, the fact that this, I mean, we'll talk to activists around the Lebanon question later, and whether Hezbollah deserves or deserves not to be classified as a terrorist group, or even whether the state can classify groups as terrorists. But I'm wondering if you could speak to the criminalization and the portrayal of the Philippine insurgency as terrorists. And could you clarify also whether Canada has followed the U.S.'s lead in defining the Filipino Communist Party as a terrorist group?
Well, Canada, of course, is always follows in the footsteps of the U.S., but this is where it's murky, because they there was no clear written text about saying that it's classified as a terrorist group. There are of course the feelings that they say that, and there was once somewhere that was a written document, I don't know if it's a written document, saying that these are the groups that are classified as terrorists. And CPC, as well as the New People's Army, was included in this list. But this list is also in Europe. Particularly because they wanted to get Jose Maria Sisson, and for they remove his rights as a political refugee in the Netherlands as part of that whole campaign to demonize the Communist Party of the Philippines. This trend had been revoked by the Filipino people, because in the early days of Marcos, he was the one who started this whole campaign of demonizing the Communist Party, and everyone who is considered to be in the left was supposed to be a communist, and this gave him a license to incarcerate people and do all kinds of human rights violation. The Filipino people realized that that's not true, because they it's the group that had been really working to progressively in defense of workers' rights, even in asking for increase in minimum wage for the people, deregulating prices of oil, the removal of the U.S. bases, and things that are really basic to the needs of the daily working people, even the land reform issue. As your guest earlier was saying, it all boils down to the land issue. The Philippines is basically still an agricultural economy, and yet more than 80% of the people don't own the land, and so it's an economic problem, which is the focus of the movement to change society. And what's increasingly happening is that this government of Arroyo is bringing back the trend of demonizing everyone that is so much complaining on anything, and that's why it's the second country that has the most number of journalists killed, because when a journalist, I suppose, a journalist job is to tell the people what's happening on the ground, and they cannot just close their eyes on what's had been happening. And so there had been journalists who were killed because they were reporting on mining issues. They were reporting on the labor front, the unionists that are being busted, and the union leaders that are being killed, and students who are on the street asking about all sorts of questions. It could be anything, and this government has given themselves the license to do whatever they like by demonizing the left, basically.
You said this is a return of a trend, but did the trend ever go away?
It did.
Under Estrada or?
No, increasingly, even during the, Marcos was removed from power because of the people.
Yeah.
And so for a while, being being considered a lefty is even cool. You know? So, yeah. And so it brought back again, you know, this government is increasingly bringing back the trend that so that of course includes news not being able to get out of the country.
Tess, I guess we're wrapping up here. There are a lot of people lined up later on today. So mm-hmm. I guess one last question. You're somebody that's always impressed a lot of people for being able to combine your engagement with international solidarity with local issues. And I'm wondering, as you look ahead to 2007, if you could talk a bit about what are the issues that you'll be focusing on, the challenges that you're facing. Struggle is long. It's decades and decades. But I guess looking ahead to the next year, how are you going to follow through on these delegation visits that you've talked about? And I know you're involved with workers' rights organizations locally through SICLAB and the Immigrant Workers Center in Montreal. So talk a bit about what you're going to be up to in the next year.
In February, another fact-finding mission. This time, it's focused on the indigenous people and the violation on the mining by the mining companies, taking away the land of the indigenous people. And in February, there is a delegation that we're hoping that from Canada would join to with other international delegates in the Cordilleras. It's time for the visit of the UN rapporteur around that time. And one of the disturbing thing that we wanted to also put awareness on is this trend where Canadian indigenous people are also being used by the Canadian government and corporations to encourage their counterparts in the Philippines, and I presume in other parts of the world, to agree to these schemes that they are doing, you know. And of course, every year we send delegates to the International Solidarity Mission, and we are already planning on doing that. On the local front, we always like to connect the local issues to the worldwide issue. And upcoming in March, there's already being plans to once again organize the International Women's Day event. And it's for the Women's Committee for Diverse Origin.
Okay, Tess, thanks a lot again for taking time to come in. Happy New Year to you. Good luck with all the organizing, and I'm sure we'll be checking in a lot all over the airwaves at CKUT. Thanks, Tess.
Thank you.